Hey, listen, I'm gonna go ahead and begin kicking off the first dipper of the day. We'll touch base on these confirmations as the day goes on. We appreciate the fact that there's still like 25,000 of y'all live streaming with us and watching Right Side Radio. Thank you very much for that. I will say this. I got a text from Paul from Decatur. So, you know, this show is syndicated across parts of the Southeast, and one of our affiliate stations is WGOW out of Chattanooga. I became keenly aware when we got into the Tennessee markets. There's another Phil Williams. Now, I'm pretty sure that the name Phil Williams is the new John Smith, because when I served in the Alabama State Senate, there was a member of the Alabama State House who was also named Phil Williams. Luckily, we were both aligned and we're good friends, so I never had to worry about what he was doing. Not so much the dude in Tennessee. So I don't
know.
Not
much at all.
No. So Paul from Decatur says, according to Yaffe this morning on his show in the AM, there's two Phil Williamses. One's on the right side here in Alabama, who has many awards from the U.S. Army. I do. Thank you. And he's a Christian and a great radio host. Well, thank you very much for all of that. The other Phil Williams is a so-called wannabe journalist who lives in Nashville. And on top of that, he's an idiot. And he says nice things about me again. So, Paul, you are correct. There's this guy named Phil Williams.
He's with NBC, right?
With a local NBC affiliate, Channel 5, I believe, out of Nashville. And last night, this plane went down, and within minutes, he tweeted out blaming Trump. I mean, that's how far out the guy is. This literally decided it had to be Trump's fault.
Not his first action wasn't to pray, say, you know, pray for the families, No. Pray for the victim. It's Trump's fault.
Yeah, absolutely. And I look at that and go, what is wrong with you? But speaking of which, aside from the fact that I ain't him and he ain't me, let me jump in this first dipper. Aircraft down. So, yes, I know that you've probably seen it, because if you turn the news on today, it is rightfully speaking one of the if not the top story. And we're watching right now, by the way, up on the screen, one of the screens here in the studio, Dan Driscoll, the Army Secretary nominee, is being considered for confirmation to serve as Secretary of the Army. He's also discussing this because it was an Army Black Hawk helicopter that was involved in the crash. So what we know is this thus far. A commuter flight out of Wichita, Kansas, flown under American Airlines banner, was flying in direct to Reagan National Airport. If you, like me, have ever flown into Reagan National, and I have flown in more times than I can count, if you've flown into Reagan, I was there last week. In fact, I flew into Reagan National last week for the inaugural. Charlene and I flew in together, and I chose it because it's one of my favorite airports. It's a manageable in size. It's direct in, you know, it's right smack in the middle of everything in D.C. When I say it's smack in the middle of everything, it is smack in the middle of everything. If you're not familiar, you literally fly on approach for landing along the Potomac. I mean, you're flying down the river, over the water, Washington, D.C. on both sides of you. You're passing the monuments. I mean, you're literally, at one point, as you're coming in for a landing, you are below the Washington Monument. That's literally where you are. But as you're on a final approach over the water, the runway comes almost to the water. Last night, what we know is that there was a Black Hawk helicopter, which my understanding is, and there's different variants. I spent a lot of time in the military. I can tell you that the Black Hawk is a workhorse. I can still remember my first ride in a Black Hawk, flying Napa of the Earth with the doors open. It was just awesome. But the Black Hawk has variants. They have the Navy version. They have the Special Operations MH-60 version. They have the UH-60, which is the general standard, you know, form, workhorse version of the or variant of the Black Hawk. And this one, I believe, is known as a VH-60, which is there for VIPs. It's flown by a squadron or an air regiment, aviator regiment out of Fort Belvoir up near D.C., and their mission is VIP escort. So these are the fancy ones with the custom paint jobs and the seal of the United States on the doors. And they were apparently flying a training mission. And if you look at the map, they know from the radar signatures, they know where they were. And as the river intersects, you had the Black Hawk coming down, flying a training mission using the waterway as its IFR, basically I fly, you know, whatever's below me, and they're flying the contour of the rivers, and here comes this flight from American Airlines, and they collided. And it was not small. The video that I've seen, which is taken from a distance at night, you can see the lights of the two, and then you see an explosion in midair. Plane went down in the river. 67 souls have been lost. So that's where we are right now. The National Transportation Safety Board just did a press conference a moment ago. And I don't think they really had anything news except newsworthy to say other than they will continue to apply what they call a whole-of-government approach to determining what is going on. But in the middle of it all, I got to thinking there's got to be somebody who has some perspective. And then lo and behold, I came across a guy that I know this morning on social media who went viral. His name's Mark McEthrin out of Huntsville. He's going to call in here in a few minutes, but Mark used to be a Black Hawk crew chief. And what really struck me about his post was there's no assigning of guilt because it can't be yet. We don't know what happened. Is it just a pure D accident? Was an air traffic controller out of whack? Was there a pilot doing something wrong? Was there error in the tracking systems or the radar? I don't know. All I know is this. There's been a collision and 67 people are apparently dead. But Mark McEthrin gave a great sort of, you know, soliloquy post about all the distractions that are inherent in being a crew of a Black Hawk, especially when you're flying in what he would call a major urban environment. The stimuli is constant, and that's part of the job, I get it. But there's a constant need to assess indoors and outdoors. There's a constant need to assess certain gauges. There's a constant need to refer back and forth. You've got the air traffic control in your ear. You've got, and bottom line is, there's a lot going on. And I thought, you know what? I think the audience needs to hear that. So we're going to have Mark on top of the hour. Now, here's one of the things that I do know, and this frustrates me. I'm not going to assign guilt right now because we don't know what happened. We do know that three soldiers died. We do know that air traffic control reacted. I've got the audio. Do you have that audio? I think it should be clip number one. Go ahead and get that thing postured. I'm going to call for that audio here momentarily. You can hear air traffic control talking to the flights. You let me know when you're ready. I'll tell you what, you're right. We'll take that after the break. Just go ahead and keep me straight there, brother. All right, so JP gave me the look and gave me the watch sign and like, oh, got to take a break. All right, listen, do this. I'm going to tell you when we get back about recent stuff about DEI in the FAA, and we've got the audio clip of air traffic control, and then coming up top of the hour, we got Mark McEthrin calling in. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. I got to tell you real quick, Flip from Priceville, Alabama. He just texted into the show and he said, I like Cash Patel's idea of relocating almost a third of D.C. FBI employees throughout the nation instead of sitting around D.C. Seems more productive to me. I'm thinking, yeah, just don't bring their politics with them down to Alabama. That's what I'm saying.
Well, have them go out and be cops, you know? And like he said, 98% of them are good people, but there's 2% of the bureaucrats that like to kick their feet up in their table in D.C. and do nothing. Mm-hmm. It's like, nope, go do your job. You know,
well, so. And granted, there's a ton of them, too, that are admin. Not everybody's going to be a field agent.
Yeah.
Not everybody's going to be an investigator or there's going to be forensic specialists. There's going to be folks that have that are designed to be paperwork pushers, and that's part of it. We have to have them. You can't do without them. But I agree, man. If you can relocate whole departments to somewhere else and sort of diffuse things a little bit, maybe so. Maybe so. There's a lot to be said for consolidation, but then right now what you appear to have is a hotbed of people living inside of a bubble.
It's too much.
Too much bubble. You got that. All right, that audio clip. So a moment ago we were talking about the plane crash in D.C., tragic set of circumstances. We don't know yet. They have not yet recovered all the black boxes. We know, though, that they have not been able to recover any live. I mean, there's basically everybody's gone is what they're saying. That's 67 people. It's the largest airline disaster in the U.S. in decades, and it's not small. There's going to be ripple effects. We're already finding out, by the way, that members of the U.S. figure skating team were actually on the plane. So we lost some of our star athletes. But you can hear. And by the way, I want to play something for you real quick. This is actual air traffic control. And for those of y'all that aren't used to, and I was an Army Pathfinder, so I've got some basic air traffic control training, so I listen for certain things, but I can tell you right now, I'm not an air traffic controller, so I'm not trying to portray myself as such. But there's one point in this little clip. It's very short. In fact, it'll play twice on a loop. But there's one place in the clip where you can hear an audible gasp in the background as the crash apparently occurred. Let's see if we can discern that on the radio. Go ahead and play it.
American 4782, my bad, stop for individual.
American 472, Washington, one star, 3-2-0-1-7.
You see it?
Did you see that? 472. American 3130, go around, turn left in, 250, climb in, 3000.
You're left in, 350-3000, American 3130.
American 4782, my bad, stop for individual.
American 472, Washington, one star, 3-2-0-1-7.
Yeah, do you hear that in the background?
Yeah, the gasp and the
Yeah, somebody in the background, ooh, yeah. They could see it from the tower. They knew what had happened, and I don't know if they were seeing it as it was about to happen or if they saw it when it happened. But you can tell the reaction from the folks in the air traffic control. You can hear them right there. And by the way, those guys, there's a crew of them in there. If you've ever seen the inside of a tower, there's a crew of them in there, each talking to certain sectors and diverting planes and taking charge of certain flights. And my understanding was this particular flight was incoming, inbound to DCA, and was headed to, I think they were headed to runway 30, and they were diverted to 33. And so at the last minute, they were diverted, but that should not have changed their approach, really, for the most part. So air traffic controllers are all in there. You don't usually hear others in the background. So I would say that was probably more than just a, ooh, that was probably somebody shouting in the background.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's scary stuff.
That's some super scary stuff. Listen, I'm looking forward to, in a few minutes, we're going to have a friend call into the show. Mark McEthrin went viral this morning on social media when he posted the fact that he used to be a Black Hawk helicopter crew chief, and he knows about the level of... I don't want to say distraction. I don't mean that in a bad way, but the number of things you have to maintain and monitor when you are in a Black Hawk crew like this. It's not just a matter of flying along and getting dozy because the rotor blades put you to sleep. No, there's a constant set of stimuli that has to be addressed. There's gauges to be read. There's outside air safety checks that have to be done. There's any number of things, especially when you're flying in formation with other birds. All said and done, I think the guy's going to call in with a perspective that'll help us to picture what could have been going on inside that Black Hawk. In the meantime, we're taking a break. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama and Tennessee syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, listen, there are certain things you hate to hear. I mean, you know, my time in Baghdad, more than once hearing troops in contact over the radio is the sound that gives chills. The other thing you don't want to hear, I'm sure, as an air traffic controller or anybody, is aircraft down. And we had a bad situation right now in D.C. out of an airport that I love, my time at the Pentagon especially. I can't tell you how many times I flew out of DCA, Reagan National. And the approach is straight down the Potomac onto the airfield. And so I know the area. I understand the lay of the land. I know that there's a very congested environment. It's probably a heavy on stimuli kind of environment because it's in the middle of a major metropolitan area. I mean, like in the middle. It's not on the outskirts like Dulles would be. It's in the middle. But that being said, I can't tell you how much time I've spent in Black Hawks. But I've never been a crew chief in a Black Hawk, obviously. And then I came across a friend of the show this morning on social media, Mark McEthrin. And Mark is the host of the Bearded Federalist podcast. And just a rock-solid conservative, a right-side ruffian. But what I didn't know was he was also a hard striper. He was an E-5 crew chief on Blackhawks, and he's got some perspective, and he's actually on the phone right now. Mark McEthrin, how you doing, man?
I am blessed, Phil. Better than I deserve. Long time Right Side ruffian, and what an honor to be on the show with you today.
Oh, man, well, thank you for what you do, and thank you for your service, and thank you for being in the mix on conservative values and all. And I know, by the way, you went viral today, and you're actually going to be on, I think, News Nation tonight, too, aren't you?
That's right. 9 p.m. with Ashley Banfield. It's crazy. But I'm just hoping I do these soldiers and their families right today.
Well, I have no doubt you will. Thank you for your service, by the way. So let me ask you this, man. How much time did you spend in the Army?
6 years, 2 months, and 4 days. I was extended while I was on medical reserve and I ended up being medically retired after that amount of time, but it was a quick and wild 6 years of the best job I ever had. It was great. It ruined roller coasters for me, but other than that, it was fun.
Were you in the aviation branch the entire time?
Yes, I was, yep.
And so you earned the spot as a crew chief on a Blackhawk. Where were you? Who'd you serve with?
So I was initially out of the 159th Aviation out of Fort Campbell, Kentucky.
Yeah.
And then I went to Korea for a couple of years, and then back in the air assault loop to Fort Campbell. So that was pretty much it. Just from 2000 to 2000, well, January 2007. So
that's good duty, man. So listen, you put a post out this morning in the wake of this crash. And granted, I think every third post is somebody who's an expert now on social media about something to do with aviation. And
yeah.
But I read yours, and there's no denying it. I mean, you've been there, done that. And what I thought was huge was you didn't try to assign blame, but you did talk about from a firsthand perspective what life is like inside the Black Hawk as you're flying, and then you also assess that from the major stimuli that comes from being in a major metropolitan environment. So give us the lay of the land, brother. What must that have been like and going on at the time of the accident?
Sure. Yeah. No, their hands are full all the time. When you're flying those aircraft, there's a lot of coordination going on. There's a lot of stimulus coming from every direction. The pilots are reading, one pilot is literally reading a checklist from on their lap, an actual physical paper book. It's not up on a HUD display or anything like that. It's attached to their leg. And they'll be reading through their checklist, and it's required by law that they go through that. From what I understand, this aircraft had just finished refueling. That's at least 2.5 hours of flight already there. Do a refuel, back at it. Fatigue starts to set in. So you're reading off that checklist and making sure you're doing everything correctly. Well, another pilot, they're pulling the collective on that aircraft to get altitude and get speed, which means their eyes are likely looking at the torque indicators, the rotor speed indicators, all the information on the panel dealing with the actual mechanics of the aircraft. The crew chief normally does airspace surveillance and obstacle avoidance.
That'd be you.
We are, yep, that's what I would be doing. Usually I literally would have my head out the window where I can look up, down, and behind us and all around. However, there's occasionally times where I need to come back inside the aircraft and assist the pilots with fuel checks. So I'll be looking at the fuel gauges and the clocks and writing them down to notate that so I can do it again in a little bit and do the math to figure out the rate of burn. So pilots are doing math, I'm doing math, everyone's listening to a bunch of radios. You got a lot of chatter going on in a space like that. Then you've got all the stimuli from all the lights and stuff happening around you. It gets pretty pretty chaotic in there. And a crew that's worked together for a while, you learn how to work together like that, and it becomes kind of a symphony of action. That's kind of the chaos that they're dealing with.
Well, and you're right. It's organized chaos the entire time because the stimuli is not the same every second. It's changing as you go. And I can just tell you, as an Army jump master, having to do outside air safety checks just for the approach to the drop zone, you're literally outside the bird, like you said, looking up, down, forwards, backwards, the whole thing, scanning for outside air safety issues. But when all that's going on right now in a major metropolitan environment, I don't know if you ever flew. Apparently, you didn't fly out of Belvoir at all, did you?
No, not as a crew chief. I did support that unit later. When I got out of the military, I was a contractor and still involved in Army aviation for many years there. And I fielded them their servers and laptops and stuff to do all of their flight records and things there. Wow. So I'm familiar with the area and that unit.
Well, am I correct in saying that the guys out of Belvoir fly the variant of the Black Hawk called the VH-60, which is designed for VIP travel? Is that correct?
Yes, they do have a branch that does that. They support all the ambassadors and whatnot in that area. They have beautiful birds.
Well, they,
they're usually
the shiny ones.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep. And they're usually very well-trained guys. Like, they have high hours. I think I read today that this crew chief had 1,000 hours.
Wow.
On that bird. So, yep, they're usually pretty well trained.
Well, that was my next question. I think you may have just answered it. So this particular crew, being in that regiment, that aviation regiment, was are they hand selected? Do they have to kind of earn the right to be in this unit with more experience than the average, or is this like just something that's just a matter of, you know, being assigned?
No, that particular unit is not quite like that. It's, you just come down on a PERSGRAM assignment and PCS there when the Army sends you there. But that is some of the details I have. When I was in Korea, the unit I served with there had a VIP branch as well. So you will find that in various units. Fort Campbell has their own unit like that. And so this one, located right there in D.C., you can imagine the VIPs that they take care of.
Well, yeah, I can. In fact, it's not uncommon, apparently, this unit to actually fly the SecDef himself. But
correct.
Well, listen, I mean, I don't know, and I don't know all the ins and outs. I did see that someone just posted, like I said, everybody's an expert right now, but I did see that someone just posted a moment ago that the approach to runway 33, which is where the incoming plane was en route, and we don't know who was at fault, air traffic control, the pilots of either aircraft, we don't know, if anybody. But what I am seeing here is someone is saying that if you look it up right now, max altitude for helos that were flying across the approach to runway 33 would have been 200 feet AGL, and these guys in the 60 were flying at 350 AGL, above ground level. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, that's common. So after every flight that we do, we have, I mean, you're familiar with this process, but after every mission we do an after-action review. We cover what went right, what went wrong, and how to mitigate it. And there is never a flight that you are on, there's never a mission that you do where you do not have things in the what went wrong category. It always happens. And so these are humans, and they make mistakes. And there, like we said, there's a lot of stimulus, a lot of things going on there. So being out of position a couple hundred feet, not unusual. It's common, it's frequent, it happens. It's not supposed to. We are trained to not do that, but like we said, we get task overload and exhaustion, fatigue hitting in there, and then the potential for mistakes and errors increase. And there's anytime you see an accident report on aircraft, it's a series of contributing factors. It's never one thing or one person to hold responsible here. It's always a whole series. We have air traffic control calling out, asking that aircraft, hey, do you see that other aircraft? That's not a helpful question. When you're in the aircraft, you need to hear, do you see the aircraft at 12 o'clock, 3 miles out, 100 feet above you?
Yeah.
You need the direction, altitude, and the distance. And so you add to that, you know, they're flying at night dealing with lights. Lights are on the ground in a major city like that. Lights on the aircraft can get buried in there. We have optical illusions that happen just because there's no reference point in the sky. You would have a common one that would happen is called continuous. My brain's forgetting.
The continuous parallax or the
it's a motion parallax.
Yeah.
It is a motion parallax, but it's the way I would train my soldiers with that is I'd take a flashlight and hold it in front of their face. And I'd show if I moved it left, right, up, or down, they can tell it's not coming at them. But when you hold it straight at them and you come towards them, it's not moving.
So
if you have a light that's buried in the lights of the city that's not moving, you may not see that.
Yeah.
And you're on a collision course. There's a lot of factors that can come into play. We are trained to observe that, recognize that, and try to deal with that. But again, it's task overload and chaos. I see the pilot had, one of the pilots was a female that had 500 flight hours. That's not very much, but she was probably under the supervision of a more advanced pilot that's in charge there. And so,
well, it's a sad situation, no matter how you look at it. And they were flying, and people don't realize too, 200 to 300 feet. That's not really high. It sounds like it is, but when you're sitting on the ground looking up, you can see the whites of their eyes if the doors are open. I mean, it's like they're flying at a reasonably low level. I wouldn't call it nap of the earth, but they're flying low level technically through the city. Am I right?
Absolutely, it's a 4-second drop.
Yeah,
it's very low.
Yeah, well, listen, Mark. Again, thanks for your service. Thanks for who you are. Thanks for being a part of the Right Side Ruffian family, and we appreciate you making time for us today, man. Bringing some perspective.
It's absolutely an honor for all of the above, Phil. Thank you.
All right, brother. We'll talk to you again soon. Take care.
Yeah, you too.
All right, I ran long to be with Mark as long as I could, but I got to go to a break right now. But listen, there's a perspective you're not hearing anywhere else. There's what it might have been like to be inside the crew. Can you imagine? You're trying to blend the lights of aircraft that are nearby you with lights of the city that you're flying at, literally below some of the rooftop levels as you come through the city, flying along the rivers, and then calamity. Aircraft down. All right, God bless them. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just pulling pins on truth grenades. That's what we're doing. And by the way, coming up in the very near future, like in a matter of, I don't know, maybe next week, the Right Side merchandise store goes live. We got, man, we got some cool stuff, too. Let me tell you, we got T-shirts, we got hats, we got coffee mugs of different styles. And, oh, by the way, my favorite is the Ben Shot glasses engraved with the Right Side logo that have the embedded 308 shell or bullet right smack in the glass. It's just cool. Anyway, Right Side merchandise store going live. You'll find all of it at the rightsidemedia.org website. So check that out whenever you want to, but be advised. We'll tell you when the store is up and running. And by the way, today being Thursday, did we have the latest Liberty Minute come out? Yeah, so our latest, we have a series of podcasts, and the one that came out today is Jared Hudson, the former Navy SEAL who does the Liberty Minute podcast, part of the Right Side Media team. But Jared's most recent edition of the Liberty Minute came out today. You can find all of it at rightsidemedia.org, or you can go to our YouTube channel and find it all there. Listen, just do us a favor. Hit like or subscribe on any of this, because that's how those platforms let us grow as a company. And since there's like 26,000 of y'all live streaming with us right now, it would mean the world to us if you did. It really actually helps us grow as a media company just to have likes and subscribes. It means the world. All right, let me go to the phones right now. Sparky from Harvest is on the line. Hey, my brother, how are you?
I am good. I enjoyed the discussion with the last gentleman. He clearly knew what he was talking about. I agree with him 100%. I spent 26 years active in Army aviation, and then another 15 years after that flying for the local test center here, and I got to teach and proctor sessions on aircrew coordination training, what the Navy and the civilians call crew resource management. 80-some percent of all our Army accidents are human error / aircrew coordination, failure to communicate well, things said wrong or things not said at all. But all that said, I'm watching the evidence come in on this mishap, and I got to put the main onus, no matter what any of the pilots in either aircraft did, possibly not quite right, air traffic control.
Yeah.
That was some really poor airspace and separation management on the part of the air traffic controllers, and I can't even imagine how they let those aircraft get that close together, let alone collide like that. It's huge mistake on the part of air traffic controllers.
I think we're going to find that something. Maybe there was a perfect storm. Maybe there was a combination of errors. Maybe each entity involved had some part in the play here. But I think you're right. I think we're going to find that air traffic control allowed far too much clutter in the approach, and that's the recipe for disaster right there. When you've got those, birds all too close to each other like that, it's just no way. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, the Army aviators were on a different frequency, still hearing air traffic control, but they were not on the exact same freak as the plane.
Yeah, and that's bad. It depends on whether the approach controller handed that airliner over to tower, and where our guys monitoring approach control and not tower.
Yeah.
I'll say this about, they're on very specified routes. and anybody out of the 12th Aviation Battalion out of Belvoir to fly in that airspace, that Class B airspace around Washington Reagan, you have to pass a detailed check ride demonstrating your intimate knowledge of those low-level routes.
Well, Sparky, I hate it. The music's playing. I got to go. But as always, we appreciate your perspective and your service, brother. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Coming up next, Butters and Lee. Y'all stay tuned.